This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Good afternoon. It's Disaster Recovery Hour. It is Tuesday, another week down. Get older, these weeks go fly by, don't they? It's ridiculous. Like I said, this is the Disaster Recovery Hour, and it's WVNJ, The Voice, 1160 AM. Broadcasted out of Oakland. It's the antenna, the wire, the tower. Hope everybody's Tuesday is going okay. What's happened in the last couple of weeks? Let's back up for a second. I want to say thanks to my last week's guest. We had Andy Weitzberg, ACP from Long Island. Andy's be a returning guest every once in a while. Talk about business continuity because it is an important factor. Business continuity really is about disaster planning for businesses, and don't take that to just business alone because it also applies to homeowners. And that's what we do here on the show. You know, we talk about different types of disasters, and the best laid plans could be, some plans always need to be modified, always need to be checked. It's just like it's like having a backup generator at your house or your business. Dan O'Brien from Academy Electric will tell you that. Counting on Long Island or Westchester or wherever you get your power from, PSE&G, with these storms, you could be out of power for 3 or 4 days. So, which, forget about just the power. You're talking about, what are you gonna do for housing? You're gonna keep the kids? Where you're gonna go somewhere else? Medicines, emergency phone numbers, things like that. All part of the disaster plans and mitigation, if you will. Which leads me into, we're starting to come towards the end of the summer. Unfortunately, my wife's not gonna like that because she has to go back to work. But towards the end of the summer, you start getting more intel regarding hurricane season. It starts to really kick into effect. It starts somewhere in June, beginning of June, late May, June, around there. Now it starts to really get more press, if you will. And hell, I'm on the radio, so I'm going to give it some press. So they upped the number of storms to I think it was about 19. They're thinking about this year. I found this pretty interesting because I've worked hurricanes before. I did the four hurricanes about 5 or 6 years ago down in Florida, and right in the middle of some of those eye of the storms, it was a chore and a half, to needless to say. Coming in from out of state and navigating to get supplies and to get people and to go through these, whether it's a public housing or it's through insurance companies or property management companies. So it takes a lot of doings to get people up and moving, and that's why I'm talking about the hurricanes. Before it really starts to kick in, because hurricanes can make a quick turn and come up the East Coast, and we've gotten blasted plenty of times through the hurricane season. So it might be a good time. It is it's a little slower. The summertime, you're not going 90 miles an hour with work and school and kids and things like that. So it might be a good time. It's always a good time to plan, but don't put it off. Just think about your fundamentals of having some form of plan. Fire extinguishers. Think about that. So I read an article the other day about fire extinguishers. Pretty involved article. People don't check them. You ever see that? Ride elevators. You go to stores and there's a tag on there. It says it was inspected by a fire marshal. Unfortunately, fire marshals do not come to your home, so it's your due diligence to check that out. Again, we're talking about preparing for the worst. And the person who is prepared when flooding and fires and trees impact your home or businesses, having a plan it alleviates a lot of stress and anxiety. School. Remember, studying for school tests. It's apply the same mentality towards that. It is going to be kicking up with the hurricane season. How they classify it is it has to be. Just give me a little background, a little intel. Nothing to write home about. But it has to go 39 miles an hour or higher. That's how they classify these storms, and it goes alphabetical. A, b, c, d, and so on and so forth. So like I said, it went from 6 to 10 hurricanes. Now they're up to like 14 to 19 storms. So today's like I said, last week's guest with Andy and Chris Green from National Ready Corp. We talked about that Oslo situation. Again, those are the types of things. Those are also types of things we discuss on the program. International disasters, because those types of human incidents, you know, terrorism and things like that, that's, you know, it's part of everyday life now in America, you know, and you know, a couple more weeks from now, you know, it's 10 years since 9/11. So it's every citizen's is responsibility to take a look, you know, say something, you know, the Port Authority's got a big campaign out there, and it's true, you know, I think they're doing a heck of a job and even little kids, you know, talking about preparedness and seeing something out of the ordinary to school kids. And one of my guests next week will be Frank Salento. He's a retired law enforcement. We're going to talk about children and safety, and I mean, I have kids, and you know, I can't imagine you know, going through that as an adult, as a parent, you know, something happened to your child, you know. So that's next week's show. Also with returning guests, I have John Grimendi. He's a ham operator, and he did a lot of work downtown with the towers, because the North Tower had, I think it was the North Tower, had the antenna, and So you know, a lot of cell service and radios, had a lot of bad traffic down there, communication wise. So the hams actually had a big part in communicating with first responders. So that's going to be a good show next week. Today we're going to have another return guest. We have Jerry Giesinger from the Disaster Restoration Academy down there in Tennessee, a service master guru. As you know, I did join the service master franchise not too long ago. There's CPP, and there's also Service Master. So I'm part of a larger group now, which is really great, because I have a lot more resources that I can pick from. There's a lot of smart guys out there. And Jerry and I are going to be talking about storm chasing, and when large areas get impacted by Mother Nature, and some of the people, unsavory characters, come out of the woodworks to try to put things back together. You know, these so-called disaster restoration guys with you know, nothing but a pickup truck and a ladder. So that's something that you should you know, with talking to your management company or your insurance company, you should inquire, you know, who are the vendors. You know, that's a big thing, because guys in our industry are getting a black eye from people who ambulance chase, basically. You know, they hear a fire, they got scanners, or a large flood, or, you know, a vehicle impact, trees through commercial spaces, they just show up and they say, yeah, sure, you know, I can help you out, so on and so forth. And they're really, it's not the right approach. You should, there's a protocol for it. So we should, like I said, pay a couple bills, go to break, and be right back. Thanks. Welcome back, Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. Between 1 and 2, every Tuesday here at 1160 AM, The Voice, WVNJ. Captain Tom, if you are listening, we're investigating some new music. So Captain Tom is giving me a little ribbing on my music. I like the music. It sounds good. With that, before we went to break, I was kind of setting up because Jerry's on the phone. Jerry, you there?
I'm here, Chris.
All right.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm doing great, and yourself?
I'm not too bad. It's a little little hazy up here. It's hot and humid like it was in Tennessee a couple of weeks ago when I was down there. Jared, what I was talking about before I went to break was, you know, the hurricane season starts to kick in effect really now towards the end of the summer and through September and October. And I ran into a guy I used to work with a couple of years ago, and we were talking about business and so on and so forth. And one of the things that struck me was... before I got down to the academy, I mean, I had gone through other schooling and I had some certifications, but nothing to the magnitude that I have now. And it made me realize that, you know, guys in our industry, the legitimate guys, really get a bad rap because of when these, you know, the Mother Nature strikes, you know, everyone, you know, pounds the zone, and, you know, everybody's a restoration or emergency service guy. And I was thinking about you and you know, there are all that schooling we went through and what you taught, and you know, I got further educated, obviously, for good reason. What, you know, we see this, and what is your take on it? And I wanted to get that because we have Joplin, we have the other tornadoes. You also had the Habub or something in Arizona, that dust storm. You know, and guys just like, you know, they get on the back of a pickup truck and they're going to go out and make $1 million. So I was thinking, like, you know, trying to wake up the public and say, listen, you know, not everybody can do this, and just because they have a pickup truck and a ladder doesn't mean they should be able to, you know, come in and mitigate your damage.
Well, I think part of it, Chris, is that we're dealing with a public that is better self-educated, if you will, than they ever were in the past. So there's an awareness factor on the part of the public. With today's internet access, with the ability, with all the information that's there that's easily accessible, a lot of people have questions before the issue even comes up. They'll present a question. Even in the insurance industry itself is that way. The adjusters in the past and folks probably were more interested and more focused on policy interpretations and coverage issues than they were about knowing about what they were paying for repairs for. That's changed. The industry has become educated. The populace has become educated. And so having said that, the vendors that provide the services have to be educated. It's an expectation level.
Right.
In the industry used to stand by the basis of water technicians, for example, needed to be WRT certified, water restoration technician. The next level there will be ASD, or applied structural drying technician level. There's going to be an expectation level of being better educated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because drying out and coming in and ripping out your house is not mitigation. That's not the focus. Is to mitigate, is to, you know, restore, dry in place, if you will, like we said many times down there. With the hurricane season, it makes me wonder with guys, you know, bombarding Florida and Louisiana and, you know, and really taking advantage of the public. But it's one of those concerns that I have, because every time, and as you know, because you did it for many years, people are very vulnerable during a time of disasters. And
well, as we know, we live in a society, it's a protectionist society. And so whether it be a local governmental agency, a regional or a federal governmental agency, this idea of protecting the people is there. Whether it be in some cases good and other places and other times bad. The point of it is that you're seeing an awful lot of requirement from states and local entities that are requiring licensing, which never used to be some in the past. There's a lot greater, stricter guidelines now for people to operate. Let me give you and we talked last time on the program about the Minot, North Dakota flood.
Right.
About how that local governmental agency has set up very strict rules and regulations for people wanting to come in to provide services in that area. So they're trying to police that and monitor that, and requiring licensing, contractors licensing, and so on and so on. So,
yeah, with that, now, do you think, and you're from that part of the country, do you think they had that plan, or was it because of the flood then they instituted it? Was it like business continuity, like what Andy Weitzberg talks about all the time, having a plan? Was government already set up that way?
To some extent, yes, but probably because of that region being previously familiar with having to have that type of exposure for floods. You know, this wasn't their first flood.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because sometimes, as you know, I think, Chris, is what drives some of this contingency planning is having to experience it first.
Mm-hmm.
So education is an issue. The ability to convince people to say, we need to pre-plan. A lot of people are simply reactionary, and it's after you've, the shame on me theory, you know, I'll learn once and then I'll go ahead and I'll put it in place. So, yes, education is a key. But sometimes difficult to educate until people have experienced it.
Mm. Now, one of the guidelines that we adhere to was the IIRC or IICRC. Those are really setting the rules and say, listen, this is X, Y, Z. This is how you properly dry out a building, or this is how you mitigate the damage. I want people to understand that there's an agency out there. There's different agencies out there, but they have the rules that you would need to adhere to. Give me a little background on how that came into play.
Well, the IICRC was actually established back in about 1972. That acronym stands for the Institute for Inspection, Cleaning, Restoration, Certification, and it's a body of a number of entities or agencies that come together to establish a standard, if you will, and it's evolved over the period. It actually started with carpet and upholstery, and then has moved forward from that to the point where there are different standards that are set that are approved by another organization called the American National Standards Institute, mm-hmm. or ANSI. And that group is what approves the standards set forth by IHCR here. And they've established the guidelines, if you will, on how to do this, how to approach it. And they've established what are known as, one of them, for example, on water mitigation or water restoration is called the S500, mm-hmm. which is the standard for water mitigation and restoration. The S520 is for mold. And so a restoration vendor, if they are legitimate, will be following the guidelines and standards as set forth in those documents on how to approach water loss restoration and mold remediation and so on.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's one of the things I wanted to get the listeners to understand about. And it's not so much a plug as much as, listen, if they use another restoration company, just get the job done and safe off your house and get it done properly. But the important factor is that these guys have gone through the training, whether it's produced by us at ServiceMaster or another academy, if you will. But to really stay on top of, like you said, with the S500, I mean, guys like myself, you, and my other guys in the industry, my other ServiceMaster brethren, you know, there is a way, and we are being looked at to hold at a higher standard, and that's one of the things that burns me, because, you know, it's almost like blood money when these people have these issues with their homes, or even in downtown, for example. When I was downtown, a lot of people really were angry for the fact that there's that you know, at a time of desperate need on their part, but yet the vulnerable and the tower's going down, that there's companies out there that do disaster restoration. And there were a lot of people that were not happy with this type of industry. And the funny thing about it is, because it's getting more press lately, and with disaster preparedness and emergency service companies like ourselves, but people really, they think it's blood money. What yeah. is your take on it?
They should actually, people should take a look at, make sure that when they have any type of exposure, when they have any type of situation that requires a restoration vendor to come in, that they treat them no differently than they would treat somebody that they would be calling to come out and do a normal maintenance on a plumbing appliance or something like that, just to make sure that they're asking questions. Are you credentialed? Do you have experience in it? What type of training do you have? To ask those questions. And then they'll make sure that they're getting the right quality person.
Yeah. If you just join us at Disaster Recovery Hour, I'm your host, Chris Plunkett, every Tuesday between 1 and 2, 1160 a.m., The Voice, WVNJ. On the phone today is my guru, Jerry, down at the Disaster Restoration Academy, a service master down in Tennessee. I lean on Jerry for these types of topics. So when Jerry gets the call in, it's about informing. Listen, disasters and emergencies, they're going to happen. You can have best laid plans, but still some of these things, you know, you're not going to avoid a tree getting into your house or major Mother Nature coming down and pounding on you with, like I said, with this hurricane season coming up. But it's a good time to be prepared or start laying some form of groundwork to know if you're going to be out of your home for a period of time. And that's one of the things that we talked about down in the academy. And Jerry spent time, and along with some other some of the other teachers down at the academy. So, Jerry, before we go to break, I saw the. Did you have any experience with that Arizona with the dust storms?
No, not really. Other than the fact that I have family there, I have a son and a daughter-in-law, and my newest grandson out of my troop of grandsons lives in Phoenix, and so we've had some. Contact with them and the Haboob, you're right, it's H-A-B-O-O-B, and it only occurs in several places in the world, and the Sahara Desert being one, I can't remember the second one, and then Phoenix in that area, believe it or not, in Arizona is where this phenomenon occurs, which is, in this particular case, there were two of them that were fairly close to each other, one that went like 3,000 to 5,000 feet high, and the other one was like 2,000 to 3,000 feet high. But it's just a huge, huge dust storm that rolls over. And according to my family, they say that it's like anything else. If you have anything that's open in the house or it's a flex, you know, it's going to find its way in. Fairly high winds, but the duration of it, 45 minutes to an hour, and it just leaves the dust behind. Pools fill up, and you have to clean them, and so on and so on.
Is that a covered loss, by the way?
You know, that would be, you know, it's been a while since I'd have to say the policy coverage is. I would say the fall under wind damage, it probably is a covered loss.
Oh, okay. Well, talking about storm chasing, guys, we're probably out there. So, on a whole with SRM, I was talking with Mark Fisher a couple days ago about the SRMs. Now, one of the things which I really find attractive, and one of the things why I joined ServiceMaster was the... when these large losses happen, the tornadoes or hurricanes, that we have a team. Again, I'm plugging, right? I'm definitely plugging for a ServiceMaster without a doubt. But what I liked about it, opposed to the other restoration businesses, is that collaborating, and again, licensed, certified individuals who handle large losses coming in total areas, and you know, let's use the tornadoes, setting up tents, setting up little camps to helping out, you know, pretty much your fellow citizens, and I find that a very attractive, pulling together resources, and it's almost like contingency planning, and it's what we talked about even with Chris Green from National Ready Corp. You know, that's on the terrorism side, but you know, having these things in play, and I know ServiceMaster handled the Pentagon, and I got kudos from somebody last week from New York City who said the local fire department down there recommended ServiceMaster, and that's how I got the job up here in the city on this bad fire. So it's a good thing that collaborating and not infighting and getting the job done. I enjoyed that part of it. What's your thought on that?
Well, we certainly are capable of handling those size losses. As a matter of fact, Chris, and I'm not sure you're aware of that, but I have the distinct privilege, and I consider it a patriotic privilege, to be one of two of the ServiceMaster home office folks that initiated the cleanup at the Pentagon after 9/11.
So, oh, that's right, I forgot.
I was there on left here the evening of 9/11 and arrived on 9/12, and we initiated the cleanup of that area. So that was the same flavors, but we're capable of doing that. And to your point of the SRM group, of course, it's led and supported by folks here in the home office in Memphis, who come with a tremendous amount of past experience in the industry, and are leading that effort. And then we basically have channeled that down into a number of franchisees in the field who have handled, for example, hurricane work for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And those are our lead people in the field when we have a disaster that needs attention. And they coordinate bringing everybody else, even mine in North Dakota, which, of course, we keep talking about that, but that's one I'm just watching so closely because it's home country for me. And by the way, just a little digression, I saw pictures of my old house for the first time yesterday as to what it looked like, and it's been through a lot. But anyway, that group, that effort up there is being led by one of our SRM franchises out of the Minnesota area, and they're coordinating all the other franchises in that area. And so we have 140, 150, 160 people up there providing services.
Oh, that's good to hear. That's good to hear. Yeah, that hopefully it didn't bring a tear to your eye, seeing your home in disarray. You and I both have experienced. I've had two floods in my house. Being in the business, it still doesn't make it any easier. Accepting that your things are ruined and you need the rehab and so on and so forth. Jerry, this came up to my mind's eye with the certification and with this hurricane season coming in. It just John Q. Public should be aware of, make sure these guys are not phony balonies. Ask for it. Well, you and I, we carry our cards. We've been through the training, certified and able to handle disasters, so the public should definitely be asking for those types of credentials.
Sure. Whether you're commercial or you're a homeowner, be prepared, plan, check with your check in your local area as to who could provide those services for you. Check with your agent to make sure that who would be certified in that area. It's ironic right now I just read a news article again from Minot. The city of Minot is preparing for diking and what can be done for next spring. So they're already looking ahead, and I don't think we as individuals and homeowners should be any different than that.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
And to start planning.
Yeah. Jerry, I appreciate the couple minutes you spend. I know you got another. You have another class?
We just started Monday. We have 16 new franchisees in here that are going to be here for anywhere from 1 to 3 weeks, Chris, and we're running.
All right. Good to hear, Jerry. I'll talk to you soon. Have you on in a couple more weeks, and we'll rock and roll. Thanks, Jerry.
Great. Thanks, Chris.
All right. Take care. Let's go to a commercial break and be back with our next guest. This is a Barry's guest and a good friend, and let's pay some bills. Be back. Welcome back. Chris Plunkett, the host of Disaster Recovery Hour, every Tuesday between 1 and 2, 1160 a.m., The Voice, WVNJ. Jack, thanks a lot. I know he's not listening because he went back to class to teach 16 new people how to mitigate damages and be on the lookout. You know what, one of the things that we did learn down there, which I already knew from being in the business for umpteen years, is the, kind of read something over text, is that the psychological aspects of fires and floods and and being displaced. It's I do a lot of since I've experienced it firsthand. I do a fair amount when I get to somebody's business or their home. I do a fair amount of just listening and trying to see if psychologically where their mind is at, and because it's disruptive. No one likes to, there's a different class of normalcy for everybody, but when you're displaced, it's brutal. It's without a doubt, it is brutal. If you're out there and you're an agent or you're a broker and they're assigning people to handle whatever comes down the pike, a fire, a flood, or whatever, there's numerous disasters. Even for example, out on the island with that nut job went into that pharmacy and shot up the place. That's a psychological effect. The people next door that are attached to the buildings or those places are shut down. You're out of business. For X amount of days till the investigation is cleared or if transformer goes up in flames, it can wipe out a strip mall. And where's the backup plan for there? Nothing really physically affected you, but, you need to produce dollars, you need to pay your taxes, you need to pay your mortgage, so on and so forth. So it takes a toll on your mind psychologically. So that's what I was talking about, having a plan. If something does happen, I think I'm running here too fast here. Let me slow down a little bit. But if having a plan will offset that anxiety. So again, I say it probably 50 times a show. I probably say it as much as Vanna White collapsed during one of the programs as they're spinning the wheel. You got to have a plan. You have to. And the government is after us to have a plan. We talked about it with numerous government officials on the show that, Big Daddy's not going to be there. There's not an open checkbook anymore. So businesses and homeowners, they should have something in their back pocket in case something happens. And I'll give you a perfect example here in Bergen County is that, the towns that always get flooded, which is like Lodi and Garfield and Maywood, Rochelle Park, Saddlebrook, they're all getting together to figure out, and go to the government with a plan. And see, the government will act if you have something down there where they can sink their teeth into it. So communities really, that part of the government works quite well, democracy wise. That's for sure. I don't know about this debt ceiling thing, but that's not for us to talk about. Even though it is a disaster, I have a surprise guest in the studio today. I put off another guy till 2 weeks from now. Another guy, I shouldn't say it like that, but this guy, this person, friend of mine. I met him when I was met him through social media, really. And he was a humanitarian, went down to Haiti, did the Lord's work down there. After the earthquake. And so, Paul, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
It's Paul Sebring, big Paul, as we call him, BP. I wouldn't say extreme humanitarian, but similar to that, no?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. I know we just got off the phone with Jerry. We're talking about you know, people being certified to do certain things, and the fly-by-night companies. Paul is a perfect example of somebody who goes into a zone, and Haiti was the zone for him at that particular time. Paul has medical training and was an emergency room nurse for a number of years, and so he thought going down to Haiti, they knew that, you know, it's a third world country, really, that he could be of help, and obviously he did. He did some great things down there. But what we classify as NGOs, non-government organizations, are all driven by donations and fundraising and things like that. So that actually, that's why Paul's in town. He's making a swing on the East Coast, saying thanks for the number of people that were donating to his organization. Why don't you talk about that for a second?
Okay. Well,
just the history of it, because I know people have signed up for the podcast. We've had numerous people ask you questions. I just cut you off. Sorry. Numerous questions through our drhradio.net, the website. You can put on there a comment. Again, it's drhradio.net. Throw in a comment, a question, whatever show you want. I can get somebody to answer for you. But they know you primarily through the podcast, and we got some good traction off of that. And I had you on, when was the last time? Was it January or something?
It was the end of January, right before I left for Ecuador.
Okay. So, yeah, you had been in Haiti with some other Dynamite people, with Paul, the LP, and but you had moved on to Ecuador with the intention that the flood season's going to be happening down there. Again, people, if you want to understand what Paul is, it's just like the Red Cross, but, you know, he's smaller, you know, five or six team members, and going down to make a difference. And that's the beauty about our country, because, you know, a lot of people always looking for us for money, but we supply a lot of labor throughout this entire world. So with that, like I said, I cut you off. Talk about what MMRC. Quickly, we won't go too much into it, but.
Well, like you were saying, I went down to Haiti. My training was, I wasn't actually an ER nurse. I used to be an EMT.
Okay.
And I went down there to help out about 10 days after the earthquake. And I was going to help in a medical capacity is what I wanted to do. But I got there and they had doctors, nurses, and surgeons. So I was completely outmanned. But they didn't have anyone working the logistics side of things.
Mm-hmm.
So seeing that was a huge problem, spent the next year working on the logistic distribution, back channel communications between the really big NGOs that didn't communicate with each other.
Right.
And we filled a gap that was in dire need of being filled, because, you know, Group A had a lot of one thing that Group B needed, and vice versa, and we were able to distribute it evenly and make sure that everyone had what they needed to help the Haitian people.
Mm.
And after that, you know, after the whole thing with the problems that we had at the end of the year with the government and LP getting locked up and getting them out finally, and you know, it was decided that, you know, I wanted to take it to Ecuador. And, you know, initially our plan was initially to go to Colombia,
mm-hmm,
and help out in the rainy season. But we were contacted by PAHO, and they asked if we wouldn't mind going to Ecuador instead. It's a smaller country with a lot less money. And they knew that, you know, if the flooding were to hit, it would get pretty bad. So we...
cholera would have been an issue.
Not cholera. No, not in Ecuador.
No, oh, no. Okay.
Not in Ecuador, just the flooding, landslides, things like that, search and rescue. We got to Colombia, and we took a 42-hour bus ride to Guayaquil, which I pray I never have to do again in my life. And we got to Guayaquil, and we were expecting these massive rains like they get every year. And the first 18 days we were there, it didn't rain a drop. And when it did rain, it was just a slight sprinkle.
Wow.
So we shifted gears, realized that we were already in country, that there probably wasn't going to be any need for disaster relief, and we launched a cleft lip and cleft palate surgical program.
Wow. And Paul is, you know, with our government, we have all these different agencies, right? And they don't communicate. So that's basically, you know, transcended right over into Haiti, what you were talking about. You had NGO A, NGO B, you know, they have this, the other company has, the other NGO, non-government organization has that, and but they couldn't talk, and so logistically that's where it was lacking. And I remember, you know, they have it on 60 Minutes and numerous other news agencies talk about having all this material down there, nothing's getting distributed, and here you guys find this niche really. And we're able to expedite, including transporting of the injured.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a perfect example of a logistics distribution, there's two of them that come to mind. One of them was, we were down there in Haiti, and we got contacted on a Saturday night from International Medical Corps, and they got news that the 399th Medical Battalion, I think it is, they had 10,000 units of vaccinations for, oh my gosh, I can't believe I just forgot it. Anyway, so they had 10,000 vaccines they needed distributed, and we were the ones that they called, and we got it distributed within about 4 hours.
Wow.
And then the other one is, we got a call from, I want to say Save the Children, that they had 6,500 cases of Pedialyte that they had to move. And with a little bit of coordination, we were able to move 6,500 cases in about 2 days, 2.5 days, something like that.
Yeah. You know, it just resonates with just like with Katrina, you know, people didn't get evacuated or didn't listen to the government when they're getting evacuated. So with that, it's just like with Haiti. I know we got the Queensland. You had the flooding. Japan. We had Wanda on the program. Besides you being a good friend of mine, and I'm unfortunately we met through a disaster, the Haitian earthquake. That connection, but I don't think people realize. You know, the Red Cross is a monster, and they get millions and millions of dollars, and rightfully so. But there's a lot of smaller NGOs, non-government organizations like yourself. I know you're going to be putting on hiatus for a bit because you want to finish up with your schooling. We'll talk about that in just a second. Let's do a commercial break, and we'll pick up for the last quarter of the hour. We're back. Welcome back. Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. Every Tuesday between 1 and 2 p.m., WVNJ, 1160 a.m., The Voice. In the studio today, I have Paul Sebring, BP, as we tag him at. Paul's making his way up the East Coast, thanking people for over the last year and a half of donating to MMRC Global with their work down in Haiti. And then they're still doing great work. Paul Wagner's down there still doing great work. but with that, it was kind of a surprise. I'm glad he was able to stop by, because, you know, like I said, everybody knows about the Red Cross, but there's hundreds of small guys, small NGOs like Paul, and also Paul Wagner and Wanda, and it's driven by fundraising and donations. And, you know, these people have put their lives on hold to help others. And it's not a pitch what I'm talking about as much as it's just the great American spirit, in my opinion, you know, how people want to help others. And I think our country is the leader on the planet with that. So with that said, we only got a couple minutes left of the show. So, Paul, where what are we going to happen? What's happening going forward?
Well, on a go-forward basis, I'm actually going to be returning to school. I want to finish up my... I want to actually going for a second degree, becoming a nurse. And the reason for this is it's so hard to do fundraising nowadays. The economy is in such turmoil right now that I want to continue our group's work. So, you know, if I'm a nurse, it builds a lot more credibility. Mm-hmm. I'll be able to do a lot better in the field. And... you know, we can come back and work for a while and keep the missions going if we don't get the sponsors in.
Yeah. I saw some of the videos. Perhaps you can lend the show a video. We could put it up on the website.
Yeah, for sure.
Some of the stuff with the Pauls were doing down in Haiti, getting rides with the UN helicopters, getting with the cholera outbreak and stuff like that. But, you know, Paul is plug and play both poles were plug and play down there. Paul Wagner has his expertise in construction and logistics, and Paul had the EMT background. And again, it's that American spirit that, you know, people in the world count on Americans to come help in their time of need. Besides the dollars, the human factor. So, but I know you have a ton of people that you wanted to thank, and that's why you're making a swing up the East Coast before you head back out to Arizona. And you say, you know, people are like, hey, Chris, what's going on with the Disaster Recovery Hour? Well, let me tell you something. This is a disaster, and like I said numerous times, the world's flat. I mean, we're all part of this this party now. something happens in another country, you know, United States, the Americans, like the Pauls, you know, will get on a plane, put their lives on hold to go help others. That's why, you know, we're talking about it. That's why, you know, it's on the show, and you know, that's why Wanda was on the show with Bruce Loberg calling in from Japan. And Jim Arnett down in Florida, you know, putting his life and his family on hold to help help others. You know, when he was down south after the tornadoes, and you know, it's not to, you know, it's that spirit that that I really like people to realize. I do have a question from Sandy. It says, Paul, is it hard to get donations for these projects in this economy? Thanks, Sandy. Paul just answered it. It is, and that's so the reason why you're putting your organization on hold, correct?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's been so hard to get the donations. I mean, there is a lot of, because of the large NGOs and sometimes they've mismanaged the funds, we're finding that there is a lot of donors' remorse. Only that, but, you know, as a very small and micro NGO, we do have a very small pool. We don't have a huge budget to do marketing and television campaigns and everything. So what we do is word of mouth, and you can only go to the well so many times.
Right.
I mean, you know, we've talked so much about the U.S., but, you know, Canada has been very supportive of us as well. You know, I want to send out a huge thanks to Nancy Murdoch. She's been so instrumental. I mean, she's introduced us to Chris and the show. If it wasn't for her, we'd have never known about each other. You know, Jack Aronson and the whole family at Garden Fresh, Linda Wagner from Arizona. I mean, my whole Chicago team and everyone, just basically these small groups that have supported us. You know, it's just, you know, the biggest thanks I do want to say, though, is I do want to publicly thank Paul Wagner, though we're not working together right now. While we were in Haiti, it was a very hostile environment. And, you know, the year that we worked together, you know, through thick and thin, I always knew he had my back. And, you know, I just wanted to make sure that he knows that I really am grateful for everything he did for me and that he allowed it to, you know, we could do this work together.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a thousand stories to go along with that one right there. And there's other smaller NGOs that I know you ran into down in Haiti, and your aspirations of going down to South America and helping out there. It's really amazing. And Sandy, you know, with your question regarding fundraising, you know, it's across the board. It's just like budgets, you know, getting cut. It's not a political show, but you know what fundraising is the first to go. You know, bottom line is, you know, you want to do good, but you know, where's the funds to fund an organization like Paul's? But like I said, but you're going to put it on hold, complete. So, you know, start up the engine. What, a couple of years from now, get back into it?
Yeah, I want to get my Bachelor of Science in Nursing, get some time under my belt, a few months, maybe a year, and then when that's done, travel nursing pays really well. I can work for about 3 months and take about 3 to 6 months off and go where in the world we're needed. Either, you know, here in the States, I've got some plans in place that, you know, I want to start executing so that we can make sure that we can help here at home in case of an emergency before heading overseas.
Mm-hmm, right. And you're right. Paul Wagner and Nancy were on the show, 3 or 4 months ago, and that was a good show. And many thanks to them. I'm a better, very grateful to have met you guys through this. Through the social media, and it's been very helpful. You know, you can go and just look up donations you can Google donations and find a place. I'll give you an example. A perfect example is my brother sends like $15 a month to a family. You know, it's $15. You know, so, you know, every little bit does count. You know, the show is not about, you know, plugging for fundraising and things like that. It's not to say that it's not a good thing or a good idea to do, but just that making awareness, you know, the disasters that happen in our country and in our neighborhoods and our communities, all pitching in together. That, you know, that's why the creation, not, I shouldn't say really the creation, but, you know, you have your OEMs, Office of Emergency Management, per town, per county, and then they go statewide, you know, and they're talking. And what you were talking about logistically, you know, you're having these big guys down and, you know, doing all this, having all this material and trucks and things like that in country, and they can't get to point A. You can't get to B to A, you know?
Understandable. And if I can just say one last thing.
Yeah,
you know, even though, you know, if there are donors out there that are looking to make a donation and they want it to be here in the States and really hit their dollars, there's a gentleman by the name of Eric Klein with CanDo, C-A-N-D-O, .org. And he's been heavily involved with Katrina, with all the hurricanes, Joplin, everything like that. He's been working here in the States very heavily and overseas as well. And, you know, with, he's the kind of guy that, same personality as us, gets everything done and, you know, doesn't waste one penny that's sent to him.
Yeah. You know, I just saw something in the paper about an NGO. The guy was, about 95% of the money was going to him and his and his salaries. It's just, and you're right, you're a donor's remorse, right? Donation remorse, or whatever, however you tagged it. Paul, I know you got to shoot back to the city. You got some more handshaking and thank yous to put out there. I'm glad you made time to stop by the show. You were an integral part way back in the day when we started. And good luck with the you know, forwarding your education. And what's your sign off? So you got the client. Can we get that information put up on our website? Someone could link
yeah, I'll
it
send
to
you
him?
Over Eric's stuff as well.
Okay, that's cool. So with that said, we got a couple seconds to go on the show. Again, it's about, you know, about making a plan. By the way, Captain Tom, I'm considering that music thing. All right, so it can't be Jimmy Buffett. But and with that said, we're wrapping up the program. Paul, thanks for coming in.
Thanks,
Jared, for taking a couple minutes out of the academy. Wanted to talk about that credentials and make sure, you know, hire a proper contractor. Whether your insurance broker, your agent, get the intel, get the information. Who's going to be coming to your house? Who's going to be coming to your business? Especially, you know, business. It's like, you know, you got to make money. Disaster Recovery Hour, I'm your host every Tuesday. I am Chris Plunkett. I'm your host every Tuesday, between 1 and 2, WVNJ 1160. AM, The Voice. Next week, we have a very good show next week. Bill's going to put it up on the website. We're going to have a ham radio operator who was instrumental downtown, and we also with child safety. Take care. Enjoy the week.